Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
In this edition of Schooled with a Professor, you're going to get schooled on what's going on behind the scenes internally with the Seattle Seahawks. And what it comes down to is philosophy. And you know Pete Carroll, John Snyder, they're real big on trying to come up with new ideas, new motivating tools, and different ways in the structure. And one guy that they've kind of fallen upon right now that's worked out very well is Ryan Holiday. Ryan Holiday did a book called Ego is the Enemy, also The Obstruction is the Way. And it's a book that, pretty much was recommended by Mike Lombardi, who was then working for Bill Belichick. And what happened is John Snyder sitting around with Mike Lombardi and saying, hey, so let's get into some of the mindset of Bill Belichick and how he does things. And apparently, and joining us right now is Ryan Holiday, you got into the mind of Bill Belichick. You got into the mind of the Seahawks. And so you right now are probably in the thought process of two of the best football organizations. What is it that you were able to come across with your book that really kind of sold these guys?
You know, it was certainly a surprise to find out that I'd sat down to write a book that was ostensibly about ancient philosophy, and then the next thing I know, I'm talking to the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks, and they're in the Super Bowl together. It was pretty amazing. But I think the reason that happened is that for 2,000 years, Stoicism, which is a philosophy that I try to incorporate in my books, has been practiced by everyone from Marcus Aurelius, who's the emperor of Rome, to Epictetus, who's this former slave, to all these great artists and entrepreneurs and brilliant thinkers throughout history that are trying to do what coaches are trying to do, which is manage the unmanageable, deal with difficult circumstances, make the most out of a tough situation, find what the Stoics would call the inner citadel, like inner strength. And so that message is as true to someone in Rome as it is to someone in Seattle running a football team.
Interesting. Now, again, take us through the background, because, you have this kind of old school philosophical base, but you're young. And so how young are you, and how did you start to get this kind of base knowledge?
So I was introduced to Stoicism when I was in college, and I shortly thereafter dropped out to be a writer, and I developed a successful marketing business. I was the director of marketing at American Apparel, which is a big clothing company, for a number of years. What Stoicism really is like a practice. It's a series of exercises, a way of thinking. So, for instance, like in sports, you hear a lot of talk about positive visualization, picturing how things are going to go, how you want them to go well. Well, the Stoics say, actually, we should practice negative visualization. Let's think about what could go wrong so we're prepared for it and we're not intimidated by it, and we can actually thrive when situations like that happen. So in this way, Stoicism is really not, it's not this complicated thing that you need to have this PhD from Harvard to know. It's been a philosophy for doers. And what I've tried to do in the book is, not beat people over the head with this philosophy, but try to illustrate it through stories from history and sports and the great events of the world that illustrate how people have applied this. And so, I don't think it's brain surgery or rocket science. It's just, hey, look, it's really easy to forget that we spend a lot of energy focused on things that we don't control. And to focus that energy on instead on what we do control is a competitive advantage over other people who are upset about a bad call by a ref, or are alarmed by the weather, or are distraught by how far behind they are in a game. These are things the Stoics would say are outside of our control, and thus not worth thinking about. And if we focus instead on what is in our control, again, we have this competitive advantage. And I think that's why the books worked in sports.
So you did Ego is the Enemy back when you were 29 years old. How did Bill Belichick find out about it, the New England Patriots, and when was that first contact?
So the New England Patriots found out about my book, The Obstacle is the Way, on their way to the Super Bowl in 2014. I think Mike Lombardi read it. I forget exactly how, but I ended up getting an email from him. He invited me out to a game. We've talked about you know, we talked about these things. We sort of kicked these big ideas around, and then they ended up winning the Super Bowl. And then after that, you know, heartbreaking loss, that's when he met John, or was spending some time with John, and he ended up recommending this book. So it sort of became this thing that different coaches and players were giving to each other, and not just, you know, not just in football. One of the players on the Warriors read Ego is the Enemy on their way to the championship this year. You know, Nick Saban read The Obstacle is the Way last year on Alabama's way to the national championship game. So it's kind of just become this phenomena that completely caught me by surprise, but I'm just blown away by that, you know, again, these ideas that were created thousands of years ago in ancient Rome are still working on a football field just as they work on the battlefield, or they work in the office, or they work in politics. You know, a number of senators read pages from these books every day, and I get letters from it. So it's sort of been this thing in all different walks of life.
Ryan Holiday educating us on the what it comes down to as far as just how ego's involved, history's involved. What feedback did you get specifically from the Patriots that they kind of integrated into their thought process?
Well, so the great thing about Bill Belichick is his focus on the present moment, right? You know, he doesn't care what happened in the last game. He's on the second that game is over, he's on to the next game, except if there's lessons that he can learn about what to do better. I think nothing is a better example of this than the Super Bowl this year. You know, there's that famous stat in the fourth quarter where it says how a team has never before in Super Bowl history come back from the kind of deficit that the Patriots were facing. To someone like Bill Belichick, that fact is not only irrelevant, it doesn't exist, because there's nothing about that fact that says that it is impossible to do what they were trying to do, right? So what Stoicism really is about at its core is filtering out inessential, distracting noise. So, you know, that something's unfair, that something's never been done before, that something's intimidating, that something's very unlikely. These are all opinions, right? These aren't facts of the universe. These are just opinions, the Stoics would say. And instead, you should be focused, as the Patriots were, on how are we going to score 2 points here? How are we going to score 7 points here? How are we going to crawl our way back from this deficit to be in a place of contention? And if we can get there, then it's anyone's game. And so that's really what and why I think the books resonated with coaches, because it's a reminder of the things that they already knew. You know, there's nothing that I taught the Patriots, I promise you that. But I did provide a context for them to think about these things. You know, in my book, The Ego is the Enemy, I talk about this concept of the inner scorecard. Nick Saban talked about that a lot last season. I didn't teach the concept of having your own high standards and not caring about external factors to Nick Saban. His entire career is a testament to that. But it becomes sort of like a watchword or a phrase that a coach can talk about with the players that they understand. You can illustrate it in via story rather than just saying, hey, don't do this, do this, if that makes sense.
Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase? Or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL53969. Now, what about some anecdotal historical things that, as they're reading through the book, the coaches, that they would pick up to bring that kind of Stoic focus?
Yeah. One of the stories that I heard that John Schneider really liked is I tell the story of Ulysses S. Grant taking Vicksburg in the U.S. Civil War. You know, it's this city that doesn't seem significant now, but in fact was probably the most critical victory that the Union had in the Civil War. And it was this stronghold that no commander thought was possible to take. And you know, Grant, he tries everything. You know, he tries going around. He tries blowing up the walls. He tries these series of feints. He tries all these different projects. And it looks like it's not going to work. He even tries rerouting the river, the Mississippi River, at one point. That's how desperate he was. And none of this works. And it looks like he's going to be replaced. And so he gambles it all on this idea of crossing the river. That he crosses it at a place called Hard Times, Louisiana, about 100 miles south of the city. And he skips Vicksburg altogether. He takes the capital of Jackson or of Mississippi, which is Jackson. And then he turns, after he's removed their supply line, their sort of lifeline to the universe, then he turns back to Vicksburg and he attacks it from the other side. And you can sort of see where this is going. This impenetrable fortress that was his disadvantage now becomes a disadvantage to the people who are in the fortress because they have nowhere to go. He instead of trying to throw himself at this immovable object over and over again, he basically thought, how can I turn this on itself, right? How can I think about this in a way that they're not thinking about it and turn their advantage into a disadvantage and by default turn his disadvantage into an advantage? So it's the story of sort of, on the one hand, of really profound persistence and determination, but on the other of creativity and thinking outside the box. And I think that's why John liked it so much.
So this now will probably be painful for Seahawk fans that are listening. But, okay, so here are the Patriots backed up at the one-yard line. Seattle's at the one-yard line at the Super Bowl. And this is a play that Bill Belichick has had practiced for many, many times. And, in fact, in most cases, the quarterback that was executing the play was able to beat Malcolm Butler on pass plays in the slot. You have Brandon Browner over at the position. But the interesting part, and this goes maybe into another anecdote that may come from the book, Bill Belichick decided, you know what, I'm not going to take a timeout. What I'm going to do is let the clock run down. You have a couple plays, maybe two or three plays at the most to stop them. I feel that I can stop them, even though they have Marshawn Lynch as a running back, a running quarterback, and Russell Wilson. Is there an anecdote that you can think of that Bill would relate to that says, listen, I can, you know, maybe get them to pass the ball, and if they do, I have a decent chance to get the play?
Well, what I think so fascinating about that is you have these two brilliant coaches, and they're not just thinking like, oh, how can I trick him here? It's how does he think I'm going to trick him? And so it's this, you know, it's this thinking on top of thinking, and so it's these two brilliant minds going head to head. And to me, what's actually interesting about that encounter is not what happens, but what happens after, right? How does someone like Coach Carroll respond to doing potentially the right thing or as close to the right thing as a coach can do and it not working out? How do you get back up on your feet after that? So I think one of the things you find in Stoicism is again, not dwelling on the past, not letting success or failure say something about you as a person, but taking it as feedback and moving forward. I've got to imagine that Coach Carroll, in the same situation, is probably not going to do the same thing again because of the painful lesson and additional feedback he got from that encounter. So what the feedback, what the Stoics would say is that everything that happens to us is this feedback, this form of education, but only if we're open. Only if we're open to it. You know, Epictetus, who's one of my favorite Stoic philosophers, he says, one cannot learn that which they think they already know. So if you go into these situations and you think you're as good as you can be as a coach, if you think, hey, I've done this for 20 years, I'm an expert, you're not going to be able to see these little advantages and these little lessons as they come up.
So now we're in 2015. John Snyder gets the book, recommended, of course, by Mike Lombardi. The team is still emotionally reeling from losing that Super Bowl. So when was the first call by either Snyder or Pete Carroll, and how did that conversation begin and progress?
It was actually funny. I believe I heard about it because it showed up in a Sports Illustrated article. It was the copy of The Obstacles the Way was on his desk in the practice facility, you know, which was a very cool surprise to me, and we ended up talking after that. One of the ways I remember, and actually the same thing happened with Ego is the Enemy, you know, I gave an early copy of the book, which I'd been working on, to them, and I started to hear that it was making the rounds in the organization. And I believe it was right before last season, someone had asked, John, how have he and Coach Carroll worked together so well when often the GM and the coach are at odds or at best sort of in a competition with each other? And he said, look, there's no ego between us. Ego is the enemy of our relationship. And I think what I've been able to see from that organization, what's so impressive to me, and I've tried to internalize and learn from myself, is that they're not obsessed with whose title says what or who's been there longest or who knows more. What they're really obsessed with is the larger goal of getting the most out of each player and getting the most out of each team that they're putting on the field each week.
So now, when you made a trip out here last year or so, what things did they try to pick your brain about?
Well, one of the things that they talked about that I thought was cool is that on the scouting side, they actually look for players who have experienced adversity in some form or another. And I thought that caught me by surprise. I really liked the idea, and I was asking him about it, and he was basically saying, look, coming into the NFL is going to be the hardest thing that a player has ever done. Coming onto this team and having to compete at the level they compete at is going to be the hardest thing that they've ever done. So if a player has no real experience bouncing back from getting their ass kicked or being, being stressed, they're going to fall apart. And so the front office, one of the things they're looking for is, hey, has this player made a mistake before? Maybe something happened in college. Maybe they got in a little bit of trouble on their first team or whatever it is. And how did they respond to that? Again, we can't change what happened in the past, but we always control whether we learn from it, whether we emerge stronger for it, whether we respond to the feedback and improve because of it. And so, and actually looking for that in the players, they feel like they're making a team that is set up to bounce back from injuries, to not be crushed by a loss, to not be intimidated against a really hard team. And so I just love that.
Now, of course, you probably have been familiar with last season, and particularly an article by Seth Wickersham of ESPN, the magazine, and talking about some of the internal strife, some of it dating back to that loss, and some of it actually pointing at Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson following that philosophy and being positive. For example, Richard Sherman yelling at coaches, particularly when they called a pass play at the 1 yard line in one game. He blew up later on one of the coaches, and lingering in his mind still was that loss. And one of the criticisms from an off the record person was that both Pete and Russell so positive and being stoic like that. When you saw that article and heard those stories, what did you think?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I think one of the hard parts about being a stoic in a world of unstoic people is that people can question your motives. They question whether you care as much as they do. And so I don't think I there's no way that someone like Pete Carroll or Russell Williams were not crushed by what happened, but they also don't see any benefit in dwelling on that or in adding negativity to it. And I think also as an organization, what I like about the Seahawks is that they're not pointing the finger, right? Last year when that critical field goal was missed, I think it was against the Cardinals, right? Bruce Arians sort of throws his kicker under the bus. He says, look, you got to make that field goal. That's your job. And I so loved Coach Carroll's response, which was, look, he's made many field goals for us in the past. He's clutch. We love him. We support him. He understands, and I think great coaches do as well, is that confidence is the most important thing. And the idea of dwelling on mistakes or pointing the finger or othering people for their contributions to those mistakes only hurts confidence and only sets the team back. So, look, I try not to put too much stock in anonymous sources or in what the media's filter on events, because they can be so wrong. And I think teams, have to learn to do the same thing. But I would say that the strength coming back from what happened in that Super Bowl is I would wonder what you and I would do in that situation. Mm-hmm. I think it would be incredibly hard.
Has Dan Quinn of the Falcons reached out to you yet?
No, he hasn't. But can you imagine, you know, you go all the way there and you fall short and it might be your fault. That could really knock you on your ass. And if you don't have that inner strength, if you don't have things that you look at, like I think about, you know, Bill Walsh famously, he took over the 49ers. They were like 2-14. The next season they go 2-14. But he says, hey, look, we lost better this year, right? Like you've got to have something that gives you strength so you don't despair in these situations that would probably destroy a lesser person.
What historical anecdote would you give to Dan Quinn and the Falcons after losing a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl?
Well, I'd say, look, it happened. It shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. And now we choose, right? Is this going to be the high water mark of our team, or is this going to be a setback on the road to where we're going? You know, there's been some studies of college basketball that show that losing or being down at halftime by a small number of points actually helps a team win because it gives them something to push towards. It gives them something to fight against. And I would say, you know, very rarely does a team win a Super Bowl and come back to the Super Bowl because success has its own problems. It tears teams apart. Well, here we lost, so we didn't win, which is obviously not great. But this can be something that binds us together, that gives us purpose going forward. And are we gonna seize on that and use it as fuel? So that's where I would try to direct them towards.
Final question would be if the Falcons, Seahawks, because again the Falcons haven't reached out yet. We'll try to get the this podcast to them, or the Patriots make the Super Bowl. Who do you think calls first to call you?
Look, again, I try not to present myself as some magical guru. I'm a fan of the game more than anything else. So I'll take anyone's phone call at any time because I feel like I have as much to learn from these people as they do from me. There was something I heard from Pete Carroll when I was in his office at camp last year. He said, I don't want to be the best. I want to be the only. Like he was saying, he wants to be the only one doing it the way that he's doing it. That it's not about competing with other people, but it's about setting up your own thing and doing it your own way. And I really admire that. And I take that to what I'm doing in my profession. And so I try to see it as an exchange of ideas. And that's what was so cool to me to hear that the Patriots, not only was there not bad blood between the Patriots and Seahawks, but that they were giving reading recommendations to each other after the Super Bowl.
Okay, so here's our reading recommendation. It's The Obstacle is the Way, Ego is the Enemy, and a new one just coming out this week is Perennial Seller. Where can you get the books?
You can get them anywhere books are sold. You can go on my website, ryanholiday.net, or dailystoic.com.
Okay, and remember, it's Ryan Holiday with one L. Hey, Ryan, thanks for so much for joining us with Schooled with the Professor.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.